You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. Welcome to the program, A Good Book. This is part 11 of the book, Late for the Bus, An Adoption Story, Finding My Birth Parents, Jerry and Joanne Buss. I'm your volunteer reader, Lee Close, and I am also the author of the book. This is the true story of finding my birth parents after years of fruitless searching, only to discover that I am the eldest daughter of Dr. Gerald Buss, the multimillionaire, legendary owner of the Los Angeles Lakers, and his wife, Joanne. The previous broadcast began with part two of the book, the ending of a 30-year marriage, the celebration of 10 years in my own rep business. Dr. Buss is enshrined in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame as a contributor. This is also the time when I'm ramping up my unofficial search, visiting an astrologer and a psychic, but then joining Ancestry, finding my Aunt Susan, and figuring out my birth father is Dr. Gerald Buss. We continue on with the reading. Dr. Jerry Buss is my birth father. Well, okay, I'm feeling euphoric about the discovery, but it's 2018. I am so disappointed that I missed meeting my father by 5 years. Damn. After reading several more articles, I discovered that his wife's name was Joanne and that they had married while students at the University of Wyoming. The puzzle pieces were beginning to fall into place, and the next conclusion was obvious. Joanne Buss is my birth mother. As an adoptee, to learn the name of your birth mother is surreal, an emotional threshold to the past and the future all at once. I was gaining traction regarding my genealogy project and knew by studying the list on my Shared DNA Matches tab that since Susan was on my paternal side, my second cousin Frank must be on my maternal side. Jerry and Joanne Buss, my surname of origin, Buss. According to Ancestry.com, the surname Buss was from the old French bus, meaning a cask or barrel. It is an uncommon last name. Okay, next. What was my given first name, and what was my mother's maiden name? I didn't want to ask any more questions or send any more details to Susan before our face-to-face meeting. I wanted to be able to tell her in person what I had discovered so that if she did not believe me, at least I would have had the opportunity to meet my father's sister. I was fully aware of the rejection that can happen in reunions of adoptees and their parents and/or siblings. In college, I wrote a paper on adult adoptee reunions. In my research, I discovered that parent-child reunions are the least successful in terms of continuing the relationship after the initial meeting. However, adoptee sibling reunions are much easier to navigate and often longer lasting. Siblings do not carry the guilt their parents may bear. My adoptive sister, Christine, experienced rejection when she delved into her family origins. When I sought my adoption records in Sacramento, I encouraged her to do the same. She did, via mail. But when she received her non-identifying information, she really wasn't interested in the results, other than the fact that her ethnicity was French-Canadian. In 2017, I encouraged her to join Ancestry with me. She found her birth family in less than a month. I was surprised when she called and told me, "I found my birth family." "What? How did you do that so quickly?" She was pretty nonchalant and could never guess the reaction her next statement would elicit. "Well, Mom told me what my birth name was." I was shocked. I didn't let her finish her sentence and may have been screaming into the phone when I said, "She did what?" "She told me what my birth name was." I was shaking on the outside and shaken on the inside. "Oh my God, Christine, I asked Mom, over and over and over again if she had any knowledge of my birth family, and she would say, "Your father had some papers, but he didn't think they were important, so he threw them out." She responded back in almost a whisper, "Well, I thought maybe she just made the name up, so I never thought much about it. That's why I never told you." I could not get over what had just transpired. I took a deep breath and finally had the good sense to realize that this was her day, not mine. We continued to talk about her discovery. She found a cousin on Ancestry, Linda, who had experience in genealogy and wanted to help. Once my sister gave her the original birth name, Linda asked her a few more questions, then went to work on it. Christine's 1991 non-identifying information stated that she had an older brother. Linda discovered the brother was actually Christine's half-brother, that they shared the same mother. Unfortunately, her half-brother could not believe his mother would ever give away a child, so he rejected all notions of a face-to-face meeting. I know Christine was hurt, but she was always much better than I at letting things go. I asked her recently about the discovery process, and her email response made me sad. Her half-brother was no longer living. Fortunately, she did receive digital photos of her birth mother at about age 20, and the resemblance to Christine at the same age was undeniable. As I questioned her more, she wrote the following to me. "Sorry, I'm not more help. I do know that I don't have any full siblings, only halves, and one of them died, my mother's side, and the other ones, brother, sister, father's side, don't want to have anything to do with me, even though their dad, my father, was single when he had the affair with my mother." Her search had ended as quickly as it had begun. I felt bad for my role in encouraging her to search for her birth family, but she told me she was still glad she had the answers. Chapter 12, A Return to Dr. H, Isbrent Offenhart's. I continued reading anything and everything I could find out about the Buss family. Each time I read that Dr. Buss was survived by his 6 children, it would pierce my heart. I wondered how my birth mother felt, repeatedly seeing that in print. Occasionally, I would stop reading to let it all soak in. "I am the eldest daughter of Dr. Jerry and Joanne Buss, but what does that really mean to me?" So many articles have been written about Dr. Buss's wealth, celebrity, and generosity to those in his life. As his biological daughter, it is a strange feeling to be that person, knowing I can only meet my father post-mortem via YouTube snippets. It is otherworldly, to say the least. As I watched his gestures and listened to his voice, I couldn't help but wonder, did he ever think of me? Would he have been proud of my accomplishments? If we had been able to meet, how would he have handled it? I read articles about my 4 full siblings, Johnny, Jimmy, Jeannie, Janie, and my 2 half-siblings, Joey and Jesse, each of whom received, as part of the family trust, an 11% ownership share of the Lakers franchise. I read articles about the good activities and the not-so-good activities, and about the ones that were hard to comprehend, such as reading that my birth father, Dr. Jerry Buss, once made a complicated real estate transaction that involved the beautiful, iconic Chrysler Building in New York City. In my corporate career, I often attended trade shows at the Jacob Javits Convention Center in New York City and stayed at the Marriott Marquis Hotel on Broadway, less than 2 miles from the Chrysler Building. I must have walked by that gorgeous building a dozen or more times. Here I was, Jerry and Joanne's firstborn, the unknown Buss, living a parallel life, never knowingly crossing their path. It was easy for the public to follow the Buss family, while I remained in the dark for 6 decades. The more I read, the more I felt at a loss. It would be disingenuous to say that I didn't begin thinking about my life compared to theirs. It was hurtful to read any article that mentioned that Jerry and Joanne had four children. Not true. Absolutely not. Together, they had five children, and I was the first one born. There was nothing scandalous about my adoption. They did it properly, but my birth had been erased in their family. As the unknown bus, it was though I never existed. I thought back to my time in therapy in 1991 with Dr. Hammerschlag and the sadness, confusion, and anger I experienced after receiving my non-identifying information. I was angry that my birth parents were married, college educated, and in good health, yet still chose to give me away. My birth father stated that he had neither the time nor the finances to keep me because he was being fast-tracked to a PhD in chemistry. I imagined he experienced some type of grief in the process of deciding to give me away. I want to believe that. In therapy, Dr. Hammerschlag told me that their decision to give me away was a decision made at that moment and might not have been how they felt later on. I hung on to that fragile statement, and still do. Now, not only did I struggle with the knowledge that my birth father, Dr. Jerry Buss, was the brilliant scientist I had imagined him to be, but I was faced with the reality that he had become a billionaire real estate mogul and majority owner of the Los Angeles Lakers. How uncanny was it that this was the same NBA team that held my Aunt Faye's devotion to her dying day? The forgiveness I found in therapy for my unknown birth parents was beginning to crumble. I knew I needed to see Dr. Hammerschlag again before meeting Susan in November. I called and explained that I had found my birth family and wanted to talk to him about it. He was in his early 50s when I first met him in 1991, and now he was close to celebrating his 80th birthday. He was no longer seeing patients, but fortunately, he agreed to see me. 27 years had passed since receiving my non-identifying information and beginning my healing journey with him. No one else understood my feelings of rejection and abandonment as deeply. No one still alive could understand the significance of what I was about to tell him. That evening, I wrote in my journal, remembering the times in the sweat lodge. It's been so long, but the images are still so fresh in my mind. I walk through the gate and enter the property. I see the sweat lodge off to the left. Hot, dark, no escape route. The leader pouring water on the hot rocks, creating steam. 4 rounds. The smell of sage and cedar. Native Americans praying and singing in Navajo. Lots of people in pain. People of all colors and backgrounds, like the song I learned in Bible school as a child. Red and yellow, black and white. Physical, mental, and spiritual fears. I can still feel the big drops of tears on my knees while keeping my head down as I am crouched in this sacred space with a dozen other people. Rushing out to embrace the cool, dry air as each round ended. 4 rounds. Then a banquet and lots of hugging. This was my healing journey. I learned to forgive in the sweat lodge, and I learned how to tell my story. I can't wait to talk to him again. And now, on this hot and beautiful summer morning in 2018, I enter Dr. Hammerschlag's new home office. He greets me with a smile and a hug. We chat about Anne, our mutual friend, who had passed away several years ago from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. We both miss her presence in our lives. We get caught up on several years that have passed since our last time together. He begins our session lighting some Palo Santo wood incense he received during a recent trip to Peru. Then, in his magical, meaningful way, he tells me we are being transported to this time and place, leaving the outside world for now. Once again, the sage, the abalone shell, and the eagle feather appear, all now familiar and comforting. In a gentle voice, he says, "This smoke brings color and meaning to our words." With those words, I settle in and remember the tears and the fears, the healing. And now here I am a quarter of a century later with my discovery. I can no longer be silent. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is the program A Good Book, and we're reading Late for the Bus. This is your volunteer reader, Lee Close. We continue the reading. I blurt out that my birth father is Dr. Jerry Buss, the owner of the Los Angeles Lakers, who passed away in 2013. I explain how, through Ancestry.com, I found a relative who is listed as a first cousin, but through further research, I discover that she is really Jerry's younger half-sister, Susan, who lives right here in Arizona. I continue. I first wrote to her in December 2017, and she finally responded to my email last month, July 2018, and told me she wants to meet me in November when she returns from her cabin in the mountains. She thinks we are first cousins. I'm going to surprise her when we meet. With all my excitement, Dr. H is calm and neutral toward the news. I'm bubbling over. In fact, I'm now shouting the news. I have brothers and sisters. Dr. H looks at me. What do you hope to get out of this? I want to meet my siblings face to face. I want to see someone who looks like me and can tell me what my mother is like. Maybe she's still alive. And after I meet my Aunt Susan, I'll get their addresses and write to them. Dr. Hammerschlag tries another approach. And what if they don't respond? What if they say it must be just another person trying to get money? I persist. I have read so many articles on the Buss family, and I've seen pictures online, and the resemblance is definitely there. I just wish I didn't have to wait so long to meet my Aunt Susan. Dr. H tells me not to let this eat my heart out, and then adds in Yiddish, "Is Brent often hearts?" What does that mean? You'll get heartburn. I reach for a tissue. Oh no, not again. Not after all this time. I am not giving up now. Once I meet my Aunt Susan and she knows who I am hoping she will help me. I've been waiting forever for this chance. I would think my brothers and sisters would want to know about me, right? His response, yet another confirmation of my determination. Yes, yes, you are the kind of person that when you want something, you go after it, and you cannot understand why someone else does not do the same. I begin to laugh through my tears. He knows me all too well. He is the only person I know who can make me laugh and cry simultaneously. Okay, okay, you're right, Dr. H. Dr. H is now animated, using his hands, tossing his head side to side, speaking emphatically. And now you are thinking of all that could happen. It could be this or it could be that. Well, what if your aunt drops dead before November? What if she changes her mind? I don't know whether to laugh or cry again. How can truth be so funny? Is it because laughing keeps you from going crazy? I knew you'd cut through the bullshit, Dr. H. That's why I'm here. I guess part of me wants to tell people that my real father is famous. I want to tell that story. It seems surreal. It blows me away, but then I get sad and angry about it at the same time. Once again, the time flies, and our session is nearing the end. We talk a bit about his lack of energy and declining health due to a heart issue. But he stresses the importance of being part of all that life has to give. I tell him I am journaling, and he encourages me to continue. Keep writing. Okay, Dr. H, but I may need to come in and see you again if they reject me. Chapter 13, What's in a Name? That which we call a rose by any other name would smell as sweet. Shakespeare. I was now journaling like crazy, but suffering some guilt over my obsession regarding my birth family. A few days after my tune-up session with Dr. Hammerschlag, I watched the televised funeral of our Arizona Senator John McCain, held at the National Cathedral on September 1st, 2018. He was someone I admired, and I viewed the ceremony with respect for the man and sadness for his family. At the end of the service, the congregation sang, "How Great Thou Art," and it reminded me of my dad who loved this hymn, which was also sung at his funeral service in 1989. I wrote in my journal that evening, "The words my father have meant more to me lately now that I have discovered who my birth father is. And as time passes, I know that with all his human frailties and demons, my adoptive father was a kind and decent man, not famous, not rich by any means, but a man who always believed in me, so much so that he drove from Phoenix to Covina to find me after I ran away. 16 total hours of driving over and back to pick up his little one. I wanted to wave a magic wand and talk to my dad again. With my birth family discovery and all the information floating around in my brain, I wasn't sleeping well, preoccupied with this new history of mine that I had waited for all my life. My meeting with Susan in November was still 2 months away, so I continued reading about the Buss family. I read about the public struggles among my siblings. The press could be quite invasive, and I'm guessing, as an outsider, there must be a fine line between embracing publicity and hiding from it. I didn't quite know what to think about it all. What I did know was that I wanted to meet my family. I began to wonder why all the names of my birth family begin with the letter J. Jerry, Joanne, Johnny, Jimmy, Jeannie, Janie, Joey, Jesse. I begin to daydream, just like I did as a child. What could my birth name be? It was easy to imagine that my name began with the J too. Julia? Wishful thinking, perhaps, because Julia was one of my favorite Beatles songs during my high school years. But maybe not too far-fetched, because with the help of my genealogical friend, I had built my paternal ancestral line back to the 19th century and discovered a French ancestor on this line with the name of Julia. Julia would be so much better than the name that never fit me. I never liked my name and always wanted to change it to something more pleasing, more feminine. Trying to find my name on a keychain in a souvenir store was nearly impossible, and if I did find it, it was masculinized. In my career, if a customer saw my business card prior to meeting me, as we were shaking hands, I would get the look and then the greeting. "Oh, I thought you were going to be a guy." It may seem trivial to many, but a name is incredibly important, especially when you don't know what it is. The duress I experienced in my life by not knowing my real first name could have been avoided. For years, I wanted to sue the state of California and their compassionless post-adoption laws for hiding the simple, profound answer that everyone has a right to know. What is my birth name? What is my ethnicity? And why can't I have that information? Back in 1994, I was looking for any clue to a name, first or last, that I could find. My 1991 non-identifying information stated that my birth father was born in Salt Lake City, Utah, the headquarters of the Mormon Church and genealogy in America. Utah was part of my sales territory at the time, so during one of my business trips, I paid a visit to the Family History Library of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It was a fairly new, modern, five-story building in Temple Square, with free and open access to thousands of genealogical records. Perhaps I could find a link there, some kind of breakthrough based on my date and city of birth. As I entered the building, which was within walking distance to the temple, I couldn't help but wonder, could I be Mormon by birth? Raised a Baptist, then a Catholic. That would be an interesting twist. At the help desk, I was greeted with lots of smiles on anticipatory faces, but because I was unable to provide a surname or the name of any relatives, it became another five-minute disappointment. I had reached a dead end. Much like the ending at the Bureau of Vital Statistics in Sacramento that winter's day in 1991, my thoughts of resignation reappeared. I give up. This is fruitless. Just put the damn idea away for now and get on with my life. And I did exactly that. The search for my birth family was set aside again for 23 years. Chapter 14, Big Brown Eyes. Family is not an important thing, it's everything. Michael J. Fox. October 2018, 1 month to go before meeting Susan. I was chipping away at clues on the paternal side using all the tools that Ancestry provides. Census records, yearbook photos, residences, voting records, etc. I was able to find Jerry's yearbook photo from the University of Wyoming, knowing that Joanne was a student there also, but without her maiden name, I was at a complete loss. I spent many sleepless nights fumbling around on Ancestry, looking for some kind of clue. Frank was my Ancestry helper cousin on the maternal side, and I noticed the surname Barker kept popping up under the DNA Shared Matches tab. That concludes today's broadcast. Join us on the next program for the continuation of Late for the Bus, an adoption story by Lee Close, author of the book, and your volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona.